Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Hello, everybody. Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden. Truth Straight Up, the Chuck and Julie Show, brought to you by
AmericaCitizenPress.com and Denver Synergenics with Dr. Julie McCallan. A lot going on today, as always, we're going to start off with, we have a new Party Friday song. So happy Party Friday, everybody. We'll play that at 3:30. Nancy McNally, who's running for mayor in Westminster, and who we have one of her yard signs in our yard, is going to come on, talk to her about Westminster stuff. But
these are the elections that matter, right, for everything. Republicans have not won these elections, I don't know how long, but she's running a great race, kind of almost equal to funding of her Democratic opponent. And that's very hard too in Colorado.
Right.
So it's an exciting.
And then race. Also kind of talk about a little bit of the, I don't know if it's a phenomenon or what, but there's like everybody, including our dog, is running for Colorado U.S. Senate seat. It's like, and they're great people. I don't mean to disparage any of the people, but it's like, what's going on? And almost none of them have really any experience at all in this. And so we want to talk a little bit about that. But first, as I said, it's Party Friday. And I'm sure you guys, hopefully, you've seen the
new rallying cry.
I say, Vive la Resistance. Mm-hmm. Let's go, Brandon. I'm surprised. We were talking to my daughter's boyfriend.
We talk to people, you know. I talk to them in my office. No, never heard of it.
You know, so if you aren't aware, what we're talking about, there has been across the country at sporting events, big ones with, you know, professional football, college football, NASCAR, people breaking spontaneously, thousands of them, into the chant, F, but they're saying the F word, F Joe Biden, right? F Joe Biden, like that, right? And so
wonderful.
And I know that was, it just makes me laugh every time I hear it. It is just such a sticking up the you know what to the elites, I think, anyway. But during a NASCAR interview, and we played this in the show last week, an NBC reporter tried to gaslight us and say, I know. So she's interviewing the winner. And the crowd,
who's named Brandon,
and the crowd starts breaking up, F Joe Biden. Then she goes, oh, look, they're saying, let's go, Brandon. And then it's like, F Joe Biden. And so that has become a rallying cry. And the people have been paging people at the airport, let's go, L-E-S-C-O, let's go, Brandon. The other thing that's kind of trending these days is empty shelves, Joe. I don't know if you guys have been to the store. I like shop. That's my second job. And there's nothing there. I went into Nordstrom. I went to two Nordstrom racks, and it's like all you can buy are like camouflage leggings.
That's okay. We don't need to hear that.
Well, I'm just saying the supply chain.
And then I went over here to get
not only that,
and then I tried to get some stock.
Not only that, what's even worse is that people quit. Somebody's sending us little whatever that is. You can't even get Fruit Loops. I'm trying to get the Fruit Loop cups that Rev likes for breakfast in the morning. I can't get those either. Supply chain serious. And somebody had spelled out the Babylon Bee put a bunch of all the container ships backed up in California into the spell, let's go, Brandon, right? But we'll also talk a little bit about that, because some of it is, you know, again, the unintended consequences of loss. But in the meantime, though, we wanted to play for you this TikTok guy put together a let's go, Brandon song, which immediately went viral. And of course, TikTok is now banning it, saying that he's harassing people. Now, who is harassing? It's not really clear who's harassing. But TJ, if we could please play the Brandon song video.
And I say it with a passion, as I pull off in the Aston. Don't nobody like his ass, huh? Tried to cover up and tell the people, go Brandon. But we know what they saying, though. You can hear the chant in every post. Don't nobody want this commie, cause we not in China. Everybody hated Trump, and now they out to catch a body. That's what they get for treating us like we in Squid Games. Green light, mandate, like he's insane. These times, people waking up to everything. Go Brandon, but we all know what the saying means.
Let's go Brandon.
and on. But it just cracks me up. And again, obviously, TikTok banned him for harassment.
For harassment. Who would he be harassing exactly?
I know. And Charlene is like, LOL, perfect. I know. I love that. And so I think it is our solemn duty to spread the Let's Go Brandon F. Joe Biden thing. It's shocking to me. Well, of course, no mainstream media people are covering it, right? There's zero coverage. Washington Examiner had a little bit of it today, because also at the at airports and things like that, people are paging Let's Go Brandon. They're also paging Empty Shelves Joe. Apparently at Walmart, it's like, you know, can Let's Go Brandon please come to the whatever kind of thing. So it's pretty funny, but it also, it gives me hope, you know. And we can 888-627-6008 if you're listening and you want to call in, 888-627-6008. Or if you want to join us on Zoom, our producer says we're lagging a little bit. That's a story of my life. I think it means like the audio and the video aren't totally syncing up. It's like, and that's YouTube is trying to, speaking of YouTube, they banned Steve Crowder for a while.
Yay.
Also for harassing people. Now, just briefly want to mention this. When we got fired at KNUS, Facebook, Twitter, we had people threatening to kill us, right? People threatening to kill our son. Now, that was not harassing.
No, that was fine.
That was, nobody cared about that. That was,
First Amendment.
I even had liberal friends saying, you know, look, I really disagree with you guys, but I don't think you should be killed.
Maybe
chucked. But the comments on there, so that's okay. You know, we've all seen the hypocrisy. But they're going to ban this guy on TikTok making the song. But I think it's great. I think it shows, and it's funny, and it's something that everybody can say. And the empty shelves are annoying people. Biden's polling, you know, again, make what you will polls, but down.
Exactly. So it's just fascinating, and we'll see if it keeps on going and going and going, and Biden becomes the least worst president. You know, usually James Buchanan gets that, followed by Jimmy Carter, but I think Biden is trying his very best.
And this is Charlene, very literate. Who's John Galt? Let's go, Brandon. Yeah. So we just have to keep that up.
Atlas Shrugged.
You got to wonder, you know, on one hand, the guys at the conservative treehouse who are right a lot of times say, on one level, the polls and that doesn't matter because, you know, Joe Biden is just an Obama sort of sit in. It's Obama's third term, and they have rigged the deep state. This is the depressing part, the bureaucracies, et cetera, et cetera. And so it doesn't matter if it's polling bad. On the other hand, though, I think people are waking up. You did not. I got the book, Molly Hemingway's Rigged book, which is about the election and the events leading up to the election. You started reading it and said you were too depressed.
Well, it's just, you know, Zuckerberg put millions of dollars and you give it to for election processing.
Never before done in the country, by the way, where a private company came in and started funding essentially Democrat operatives.
Yes.
And ballot boxes. I think every establishment rhino Republican and Peter Boyle, sorry, Peter, I had to get that in, should read this book and then turn around and try to tell us that this was the gold standard election. It's like, give me a freaking break. Let's go, Brandon. The other thing I wanted to talk about then, and again, you guys chime in, kind of open lines here too.
And we'll have the Nancy on a 330.
Right. 888-627-6008. The other thing that is kind of odd, Deborah Flora, who we used to work with at KNUS. She had
nice person.
Yeah, nice person there. Very active in Douglas County school board type politics. Announced she is now running for U.S. Senate for the Republican primary. She joins, I wrote a list. There's seven people that I could find now. There's Eric Adlin, Eli Bremmer. I'm going to pronounce some of these names wrong. Gino Capagna, Ron Hanks, Julie Henry, Peter Yu, and Deborah Flora. Now, so that's,
I think there's one more out there hanging out.
I'm sure there's probably, you know, Tiger.
Well, you got to file with this, with the Secretary of State. So I think there are eight.
What's interesting with this is Ron Hanks, we had him on our show. We love him, by the way. You can't take a position. I can take a position.
Well, I can love him without saying who I prefer in the in the thing. And I like some of the other people in there too. I like Eric Auckland, Eli Bremmernath, maybe.
Deborah is good.
Deborah's good. And
but here's a question.
They're all fine. They're all fine.
Ron Hanks is the one. He was a legislator, right? Colorado legislator. He and our show announced that the reason he was running for U.S. Senate is they redistrict essentially. Put him and Stephanie Luck, go figure Democrats, in the same district. So he said, all right, I'll let her have the district and I'll run for Senate. But really, Gino was a city council person in Fort Collins.
Was.
Peter Hugh ran against Joe Neguse in Congressional District 2, did not win. But almost, except for Ron, and I think you would have
Eli
to say.
Eli Bremmer, I think, ran for the RNC chair and lost.
Right, but none of these people have a lot of very much, I would say, at all, a political experience. So I wanted to talk about that and get your thoughts on it. And Chuck, you know, you do campaigns and you weigh in. On one hand, I think it's good because this is indeed a time when we need to get involved. When, I mean, I signed up today to be a poll watcher in Adams County, right? I think, you know, we talked to Joanne Winholt yesterday and she's like, we need people. Mm. We can't have people saying, oh yeah, this is terrible. We hate the empty shelves, but I'm too busy. We all need to get involved in some way, shape or form, some level, some way, shape or form. So that's good that they're running. On the other hand,
well, it's indicative of two things. Okay. One, no big name has come out. Somebody who would clear the field or really well got no chance against that person. And so two, you know, there is some hope, as little as it might be, that while the polis will put every penny yes into ballot harvesting, that it won't necessarily overcome the distaste people have for Biden and everything else. So there is some hope. You're not running against the guy who's going to put millions upon millions in. But it's, you know, I guess people are figuring, why not now? You know, if I'm ever going to run for U.S. Senate, I might as well do it now. And it's interesting. And you know, I don't know if any of them are a petition on the ballot, which costs you about $250,000. So you have to have it. The only one Eli Bremmer could potentially do it. But
yeah, the primary is next June 28th.
But
as
a practical matter, you know, Ron Hanks is a MAGA supporter. And the other ones, I think, are more in the middle, moderate.
I would say Deborah Flohr is probably a MAGA supporter. I mean,
she's running as a common sense Republican and some of the other things. I'm sure she's probably is a MAGA supporter, but it'll be interesting because I think, you know, you talk about politics having lanes, people in various lanes running and so forth. And there seem to be a lot of people running in the lane of kind of the moderate. And only Ron, I think, is kind of,
you know, and it is unfortunate because, you know, Michael Bennett's like, what has he done? Every so often he puts out something and tweets about parks or something like that, right? It's pretty controversial. He hasn't done anything. And there.
Personally, I like, you know,
he's a nice man.
I worked with Michael Bennett. I really enjoyed it, but.
Yeah. So we'll just see. It's interesting. I can say this years ago, before it evolved, when I was a Democrat, I worked on a congressional campaign and I'd been a reporter for decades and I thought I was pretty cynical. Mm-hmm. I have to tell you, I was like, like Miss Unicorn and puppies in that camp. I mean, it is brutal. It is rugged. This is how he ran. This is what he did. So I was like the communications director and every day I would get like a million things from the DCCC, the Democrat Congressional Campaign Committee, telling me what to put out and do. And I'd be like, well, should I ask the candidate if that's his opinion? Like, no, we don't care. This is the candidate's opinion. And I mean, so if you're the candidate and you even remotely have a chance, at a certain point, you don't really actually get to have an opinion, right? If you want any of that national money. And what happened was the way that he ran is the finance manager, who was the most important person in the entire campaign. He had the list and literally the candidate would be in an office and he wasn't even allowed to dial the phone. That's all he did. Right. Like almost all he did all day is that the finance director would dial the number to be like, hi, this is a candidate running for, can you give me money? That was it. That's all he did all day because you have to raise a certain amount of money for the national party to throw in with you and for people to start taking you seriously and get in polls. So it's not and this is, and I hope these candidates get this. And I think this is the kind of stuff that Casper teaches at his America's First training programs. It's not like go around, because I was like, well, when should we get the candidate out in front of people and speaking? They're like, once he's raised $1 million, right? It's like none of that mattered at all. And I'm like, well, I could get him on TV and I could do this. They're like, nope, he needs to raise money. I mean, and you've run, that's the reality of running. And that was a congressional district. I imagine, you know, it's, and the—
Well, I don't think it's a secret. Laurel Eimer has said it, but the RCCC has indicated that they will not support a candidate that doesn't raise at least $250,000.
And that's for the congressional district race. That's a congressional district race.
And it's hard to raise $250,000. I can promise you. I think she raised 20 or 30 last quarter, which is pretty good, all things considered.
Right. But I mean, Ed Perlmutter, right? I mean, that's—
he's got a million in the bank.
Right. And that's the trouble with the Michael Bennett in terms of the money. I mean, Michael Bennett actually doesn't have to spend all of his time on the phone because that's all he's been doing while he's been in the Senate. I mean, that's one of, you know, and then he's gotten, he's doing the bidding of the Senate and things like that.
And if there's any question that someone's catching on, Eli Brimmer or someone else, they will pour money to save the Senate. So he will be not lacking in tens of millions of dollars.
Is Charlene or somebody want to speak up? I hear somebody's audio there. No? So just go ahead. If you're there, go ahead and just introduce yourself and speak up. So, yeah, I mean, that's the reality, I think. And just so candidates know that, you get in and it's not about making great speeches. I mean,
not about messaging.
It's about initially, particularly for a statewide race, it's about raising money. I mean, that's great if you've got a great message and it's great if you give a good speech, but first and foremost, it's about money. And it shouldn't be that way, but it is shocking how much it was. I mean, I would say, you know, well, what about this? What about that? And then they're like, nope, you know, no, he's busy calling. I mean, that's what he did almost all day, every day. When he wasn't doing that, he was going to other places to raise money, right?
And when he didn't raise enough money, he just pulled out.
Well, so yeah, this is what happened there too. So one day, everyone was sitting around the campaign office and they had sent in initially, they're like lemmings. I hate to say that, but there are people who this is what they do. They travel around the country and they support certain candidates, things like that. Really energetic young people. And this is kind of their thing, right? They're political.
Gypsies.
Yeah. They're political gypsies. So they had a bunch of them at the campaign office. And then the finance reports came in and literally the next day they were all gone. I mean, they were just like gone. And now none of us in the actual candidates campaign had any ideas. We're like, where are all those people? Like gone. Yeah. I mean, they just moved them all. They just shipped them off all to some other place. Oh, yeah.
You know, it's a brutal triaging of political campaigns. But you have somebody you don't think is going to make it. You can't go, oh, we'll keep on trying. They go, no, let's go on to some other place, some other candidate who is catching on.
Right.
That's been able to raise money.
And here's the other thing. And I got to say this, and I'll say this. This is why I like Ron Hanks. We played his campaign ad where, I mean, he just basically says, I'm a Trump supporter. I support the Second Amendment. He shot up a copy machine that said Dominion on it. People are like, that's not a real Dominion machine. Like, no.
No.
You're kidding me. Just give me. It's like the Babylon Bee. That's not real either, guys. That's satire. Okay. That's supposed to be funny. But I like some. I mean, these candidates, they got to know. I don't want to hear them say stuff like, oh, we have the gold standard election. And I, you know, actually really don't like Donald Trump. And I don't actually like Donald Trump supporters. No, they got to take it to the Democrats, because I guarantee you, I mean, we've already seen, you know, they put a little hit piece out on Deborah Flora. Now, if you're doing a hit piece out on Deborah Flora, who was like the nicest person in the world.
We should have her on.
Yes.
We've had Julie Henry on. We've had Ron Hanks on.
Right.
And we welcome everybody, but I think we ought to get.
I'll reach out to her too.
Since we know her.
Right. But I mean, it's going to be a vicious race. I mean, if there's any sign that somebody's gaining traction, right? I mean, well, the Democrats are just vicious anyway.
I don't know it'll be a vicious race.
You don't think?
No, because there's no, you know, it isn't enough of grassroots or establishment where the establishment candidate can kill the, you know, all the other candidates are not sure who else to kill, and they'll all be fighting for.
No, but I mean, once it gets to the general election,
it'll be
a slaughter fest by the Democrats. Yeah, no, I know. I don't mean the primary. I think the Democrats. But anyway, that's it for now. But anyway, I just thought kind of interesting that all these people are running. We've got, before we get Nancy, you wanted to talk briefly. This is going to make you mad about the Loudoun County, the Loudoun school district in Virginia.
Well, Loudoun County is the third largest county in Virginia, and it's filled with tons of government employees. It's near D.C. I think it has 420,000 people in it. And its school board and its D.A., you have a Soros D.A., who's just a revolting character. And so on June 15th, a guy came into the school meeting and wanted to talk about the fact that his daughter had been raped, sodomized, and sexually assaulted in a bathroom in Loudoun County School by a transgender guy in a skirt who identifies as women. But
well, we don't even know that. What it was, it was a boy wearing a skirt
in the
girls' bathroom.
Well, that's what they, you know, that's the new rule.
Right.
And as he got up to talk, he was shouted down. The police guards jumped him. School police guards jumped him because he wasn't on the official sign-up list. And then they proceeded to vilify him. Had the school superintendent.
So that never happened. Never happened.
No, there had been no insults in any
ever. Ever.
And then they brought in the Time magazine in 2016 said the idea of a predator transgender is a trope that's simply not true. Blah 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 blah. So then at least some press looked into it, and his daughter had been raped and sodomized in a bathroom in Loudoun County, and that same. A perpetrator had attacked another girl in a classroom.
What the school district did was quietly transferred the kid out of that school to another school where he immediately, allegedly, sexually assaulted. Same thing, wearing a skirt in the girl's bathroom, sexually assaulted, or maybe it wasn't in the girl's bathroom.
It was in
the empty schoolroom, sexually assaulted somebody else. And so
today, you know, the lead story on Fox is the superintendent said he misunderstood the question. Yeah. Are there any sexual assaults in the bathrooms? No, there are none. Never have been.
Right.
I misunderstood the question.
Let's go, Brandon.
Let's go, Brandon. And one of the school board members, and they have a lot of really repulsive.
Very progressive.
Very repulsive.
Resigned
for some unknown reason. But the question you have is how is that going to affect, let's say, the Virginia governor's race? Is that going to drive parents to go, we've had enough of the left and everything else along with it? Are they going to go, we're going to vote for we can vote for Terry McAuliffe, who represents everything, and has said parents should have no role in their
what schools teach.
Or won't it? If you look at the polls, McAuliffe has about a 3-5, except there's one by, you know, I'm a polling geek, so there's one by Trafalgar. Now, Trafalgar has an R by it because they're Republican-oriented, but it's a very reliable one. I think it gets A-minus rating from 538, which is a left-wing group. So if they're going to give them an A-minus, and it showed him up by 0.9, just under 1%, but who knows? So that's going to be a fascinating race. Fox has them as McAuliffe up 5 points, but you can't.
Sometimes as we're learning the hard way, it's who counts the votes that matters. But I think though, if I, my free advice to all of these Republicans running for Senate, I would hit, and I know Deborah Flora is good on this, the school issue. I think that is one thing that unites parents, no matter what their political party. I think there are parents, and I think the atrocious, disrespectful, and that's even putting it mildly, behavior of these school boards. And now we've got the Department of Justice they considered this parent who was, your heart to think, can you imagine being the father of a teenage girl who had been sexually assaulted? You go to the school board and you are vilified, you are knocked down, you are humiliating pictures are taken of you. You become the poster boy, so to speak, for the domestic violence parents, DOJ attack on parents.
And of course, we found out that Merrick Garland, the Supreme Court nominee who didn't get in,
thank God,
His son-in-law is making millions off of lots of public schools.
I mean, teaching critical race theory. And this came out today, too. And by the way, his wife works on Democrat election issues, right? To do, basically, she fights against audits. It's her job to go around the country and fight against anybody trying to do an audit of an election. Now, why would you want to do that? But I think, though, this is an issue, but it goes to the heart of, I mean, you have these school boards. And that's why it's so important. So, you know, even if these candidates don't have a ton of experience or any experience, we need people to be running for these seats. We were talking with, you know, Joanne Winholtz from Adams County, and she's like, we need good candidates. We need any candidate sometimes. And it's not easy, but parents need to do that, because otherwise all you get are teachers union candidates, basically, right? Because you think
yourself— hide as regular parents.
Right.
Sometimes they hide as Republicans. The teachers union put up somebody who just switches their registration, goes, hi, I'm a Republican. I'm here to help you with a nice equity.
Right. And you're like, why on earth would any superintendent shout down some parent who's standing there and then launch in this incredible and completely false defense? I mean, the sad news of human nature is there are sexual assaults committed by all kinds of people and across all categories, right? That's anything, anybody who's done any research or prosecuted or investigated any kind of sex assault will tell you. There's no, so for somebody to say, oh no, this group never, ever, ever. I mean, you just can't say it. It's like, they would never even lie. I mean, give me a break, right? It's just so upsetting on so many levels, but I think you're right, Chuck. I mean, it is the kind of thing that I think is galvanizing people. And I see Charlene's got her hand up. So Charlene, go ahead.
Oh, well, this is what you were talking about earlier. I'm trying to understand if this is a coincidence or if it's a strategy that you get a good conservative candidate in the primary in the Republican Party, and then there's a establishment candidate running also. And then all of a sudden you get all these other candidates claiming to be conservative, which in effect kind of siphon the vote off of the true conservative candidate. And then that allows the establishment candidate to come through with a majority.
Well, I'm not sure that would be, that certainly happens. And you're right, Charlene, that I don't see that in this list of people. I mean, if there's an establishment candidate, it'd be probably Eli Bremmer. But the rest of them are not really siphoning off because I think Ron Hanks has an advantage because he's clearly a MAGNA person and a lot of the other ones are not. I mean, there may be fine candidates, but they hew more toward the middle. And so if it goes to assembly, I think he's going to have a good chance of.
Well, it just seems like in some of the races, like there's a well-defined candidate, and then there's several conservatives, and I just worry about that, because it's like, if you've got one good conservative that is a front runner in there, then why would other conservatives want to jump in and, you know, take votes away from that one true conservative? I don't see any establishment candidates jumping in, is what I'm saying. You have one true establishment candidate, but I don't see a bunch of other establishments candidates jumping in there to take votes away from the one true establishment candidate. I mean, that just may be a coincidence, or it might be a strategy to get those establishment candidates in there.
I got to admit, I don't really know in this case, like Chuck said. I do know that you're absolutely right, though. That is a strategy in other cases. And I think, you know, the establishment, what happens is the establishment candidate gets the establishment money. So that's sort of like, you know, the first one to get that money, that's, you know.
Well, right now in the governor's race, you have Heidi Gnall, who's clearly the establishment candidate. Very pleasant person. And you got Greg Lopez. Who is clearly a conservative MAGA person. And that'll be interesting, because no one else has entered that race. And so,
there's another guy that's jumped in. He's claiming to be a conservative and a truck driver. And he's a man of color. And, you know, it's like, well, we've already got Greg Lopez, you know.
Right. We don't need Exactly. And I know Greg Lopez has worked hard. I mean, he's one of the hardest working candidates that I've ever I've ever seen. I mean, he's worked hard to solidify his position there. And I think that's
people who do that, who have very little name recognition. I mean, if they really want a conservative to win the primary, then they should get behind that conservative that's already got name recognition. I know it's a free country and everything, but I'm just saying.
I agree.
It's not a free country.
I know anybody should be able to run for anything, but I mean, if you really want someone that's conservative to win the race, then get behind that front runner that's already in the race that you know you can support, and then and make sure the establishment candidate doesn't win.
Well, here's what they're going to do. You know that all these candidates, and then we'll get to Nancy McNally here in a second, but you know what they're going to do is they're going to look at some of the polling and they're going to be like, oh, Colorado's, you know, kind of purple. It's turning blue. So I'm going to really mellow it out. And yet they're going to ignore the polling that shows like even in Colorado, like 99% of the Trump supporters still strongly support him, Republican, or 91 strongly support him. It's like these people, the consultants don't want to hear that for some reason. So, I mean, that's why I'm going to give Ron Hanks, I mean, as much as I like everybody, you know, Deborah, I mean, he came flat.
I am neutral. Yeah. I am neutral.
But I think you're right.
Of course, Chuck is neutral. Okay. Well, that's all I have to say. I'll let someone else talk.
All right. Thank you. Charlene. Thank you. Appreciate it. Charlene,
Now we have with us a mayoral candidate for the city of Westminster. Westminster is one of those rather larger cities. We live in it, but like Thornton and some of the others that really equal Denver if you add them all up. And Nancy is a Republican candidate, though it's a nonpartisan race. You don't technically say your party race, but she's running against Anita Seitzer, who's another
Seitz. Who's a progress and emerge candidate.
One of the hated emerge candidates. And so we're thrilled to have her with us because we just got our ballot the other day. Nancy, you there?
I am. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I understand that the Democrats and the progressives got a shock when you turned in your fundraising total and it almost equaled theirs for mayor.
Surprise. I just have to say over a year ago, when I announced I was going to run, seeing where the city was at that point with the water discussion, and then it just kept sort of being like a tsunami after that. But it was the people that came to me and said, you know, would you think about putting your hat in the ring? And I had to talk to a lot of people because I didn't want to step on any toes. I didn't know if we had anybody seated on council that was going to run. I would have supported them wholeheartedly. So after that gut-wrenching pieces that you go through, my husband always looks at it. It's a win-win for him. If I lose, he gets me back. If I win, the citizens get me, and he gets that. So he's been such a supporter through everything that I've done in this crazy life. But I'm sure when he first married me, he had no idea how this was all going to look. But it's the people, it's truly the people. And last weekend, we were able to hit our and knock on a door, and a person answered. And it was our 10,000th house that we had gone to a door. And we did not pick which doors we went to. We had no idea as we
campaign
as we went to house who lived there and what flavor of politics they were. And it really didn't matter because honestly, we only had people always afraid of walking because, oh, what if somebody slams the door in your face or what if they scream at you? Don't put that stuff on my door. We honestly maybe had 10 people act that way. We had one gentleman on a walk that had his dog off leash and just asked what we were doing. And I said, I'm running for mayor. Nice to meet you. And he immediately asked, what's your party? And when I said, he starts screaming down the street and using obscenities and stuff. Yeah. And so you hit those, but the next door you go to, people are just grateful to see a candidate, And people would look at my brochure and say, well, this is you. You're the candidate.
You're working hard.
Yeah, working
well,
hard.
What are people telling you?
What are the key issues?
Key
issues are water. I don't care which part of our city you are in. Water. And people have taken the last 5 years worth of their water bill. And it's not just a 3% increase over those years. It's one woman who has used the same amount of water, which tells me, I mean, in our household, I call him Mr. Mac, Mr. Mac all the time, how much more can we conserve? This city has been taught and educated in conservation at our Westie festivals, any place we had people. Our utilities department used to bring in all of the seventh or eighth graders over to Front Range College and teach them conservation of water because they knew it was important for them to understand we live in a desert, we need to conserve what we have, and how to do that. Well, you only have so many appliances, so many toilets, so many shower heads that you can change out. And at some point, what else can you do? And I go back as I've talked to all of these people over the last many months. People chose the home they live in.
Right.
And we're original owners here in our neighborhood. And when they showed us the different lots, we picked one that had a smaller front yard because we knew we'd be raising kids and the backyard meant more to us for kids to play, for having animals. We've always had 2 to 3 pugs. And so that's what was important to us when we picked. Well, everybody chose a home. Well, fast forward to what we're involved with now with water rates. Down at the Fall Festival in Historic Westminster, and people think, oh, those are small homes, blah, blah, blah. Those homes sit where our orchards were, what we're known for. So they have maybe not as wide of lots, and some of them are wider, but they have very deep lots. So they have big lots. I saw this summer some of their gardens, which were beautiful, but gardens also take water.
Right.
So when you look at all of that, people just say, like this woman I was saying, she took her 5 years, she's used the same amount of water. At what point don't you have anything else to squeeze the blood out of the turnip, so to speak? And the answer is, you don't. This is what we need to live in this home. And that's what seniors down in Historic Westminster, in some in tears, asking me. I had a booth up and we were just talking at their fall festival. Nancy, am I going to be able to live in my home, die in my home, or am I going to be forced out of my home because of all these expenses? Right. Well, that's a good question.
Right.
And fast forward to just a few weeks ago, a developer stopped by, asked if he could talk to me. I said, if you don't mind coming to my home, he called me first. So he came over and we sat out on the patio for 3 hours and 40 minutes. I was beginning to think I needed to start thinking about what do you want for dinner? But his first statement to me as he was coming in was, do you understand the city is about to spend money on the most expensive land in the city for a water treatment plant? And I said, sir, that's what I understand. And then his next statement was, why is the city not taking care of the people that live here today?
Yeah. Hello.
And by
that doesn't sound like a developer.
Nancy, let me ask you this. And because I, you know, hold that. And one of the reasons we like to talk about Westminster is because I think what's going on in Westminster is going on in so many other cities around the country. There was a time, and I've covered city politics for years, when whether it's Denver over the suburbs, when city council members were members of the community who ran because they wanted to kind of help, and they listened to what citizens said, and they were responsive to what citizens said. But things have changed, I believe, anymore. Now they answer to developers, or worse than that, the Democrats, you have some of these candidates, they answer solely to some very progressive ideology that wants to fundamentally change how we live and fundamentally change the lifestyle that people pick. Like you said, you pick your house, you pick it in the suburbs. I mean, do you see that too? You've been around and on city council before and for a long time.
Sure. Yes. What it feels like from the time when I did serve for 10 years as mayor until I was term limited in 2013. Even my neighborhood was built so it had choices. It was built. The first few blocks was built for that first time home buyer. And then as you got into the subdivision, it was bigger homes. So again, people had choices, and as they either had families, they could move up and get bigger homes if they love that neighborhood, hopefully in the same neighborhood. And on the reverse side, if you have your family and now you're wanting to downsize, you have a place you can also downsize to. So there were people that had that foresight to look at those things. What did I hear at the doors? It's about all the apartments. Now, let me tell you, my opponent would really love to nail every apartment that's been built on me because it was in the 2013 land use plan. So let me just take a couple minutes to explain what a land use plan is.
Okay.
First of all, the 2013 plan would go to 2035. And that plan, and this question has been asked, how many people did they expect to be in Westminster by 2035? A counselor has asked that question for 4 years and it's never been answered. Well, getting ready to run for mayor, I knew I needed to look because the 2013 plan keeps coming up as the reason why there's all these apartments. And so I went and dug it out, and the answer to how many people were looked at, forecasted to be in the city by 2035, and that's 129,423. Now, just remember that, because the next one that they're trying to approve now goes only 5 more years to 2040. And that number's 150,000 people.
Wow. So, right.
And here's, I think anybody who's lived in Westminster, you know, we moved in, what, in 2015? So 6 years, and I went over to City Hall and I just went, wow, these people do not believe they serve the citizens. They believe we serve them. They are arrogant. They are unconcerned about your problems. They are rude often, all the way through. And it happens to a lot of cities. It happened to Glendale back in the 1980s, where the employees basically thought the city was there to provide them a luxurious lifestyle.
Well, it happens with
lifestyle.
Federal government employees.
Employees. And so, you know, I guess, so the city manager has resigned, which is good news. And do you plan to make some major changes in personnel in that city?
It isn't just my decision. I learned after my first election way back that I can't promise anything. I can share with people how I see the world. And I see that we do have a lot of people in the city manager's office. Do we need them all? I think when we have a seated council, we need to have that discussion. I know that 2 years ago, in the middle of a budget that it wasn't a two-year budget process, it was in the middle of a budget that had been already approved, the city manager that just resigned had put forth a $1.9 million proposal for 13 positions in the city.
Wow.
And it was for innovation, technology, and communication. Mm. We had some great people that filled those spots. I will tell you, only one of them was put out for actually having an interview. And all the rest were people that were placed there. Many, I can tell you today, many of those people aren't there. So now is the time to relook at all of that and say, to me, I am not convinced we have to have that 1.9 million in there for that piece. It's looking at things like that and taking care of them while the numbers are down. And if that's something that could be looked at and could be slimmed down or looked at differently and not have, not refill some of those positions, I think now's the time to do all that. So this is the perfect time to reexamine what do we need and what do we need to get the job done. And I too have heard from people that are trying to do something in their home and the building inspectors. And the question was, does anybody talk to one another in that department? Because the first one will come out and tell them to do this and the people do it. They call back for the next inspection. And that person says something maybe
different.
Totally different to do. And you do that. And then the third person comes out. And in one case, it was they put a cease and desist on them. It was just a lot of frustration about how do we manage. And then you top it off with COVID when people weren't and some still aren't in the city where you can open or go in the front doors and go up and talk to people. So it's made it harder. I heard about trying to talk to people, but voicemails weren't set up and they couldn't get a hold of people, even though they were told they were working at home. So there's all of that. And with COVID and not knowing families, what they were going through, if they had COVID themselves or whatnot, you understand all of that. But at some point, we have to level out and remember
who you
work there as customers. Right. Yes, we're there working for our citizens, and we need that good customer service for them to be able to do their things.
I once had a titular head of the city, and you know, I was amazed by the waste and that everybody there had gotten their job and immediately created another position to do whatever work they were supposed to do.
Their assistant.
And so I cut the city payroll in half, literally in half. And it made no difference. It made absolutely no difference. In fact, people got a lot better service because they knew that if half the people could go, they could go. So,
well, Nancy,
it's amazing stuff. So what can people do to help you at this point? I know the ballots are out and what can folks do?
For any of your candidates that you support, and if you support me, I need you to go to www.mcnallyformayor.com, and it's F-O-R mayor.com, not the number four, it's F-O-R, and press that donate button. And I'm telling you, $10, $20, $50. This morning I got a $500 donation.
Good.
Because people understand now is the time. If we're going to be doing our last piece of get out the vote, now's the time we need to have that, because everything takes time to get it ready to go out, depending on what media you're using. And I am using a consultant because there's no way I could run this campaign and do all this all by myself. Mm-hmm. And he just needs some lead time to know how much money do I have so that we can spend it in the most precise way possible to target everybody. So if people are holding back, now's not the time to hold back. now is the time.
And, you need it now.
I love it. The person that gave this morning said, I'm going to give it to you instead of a therapist. So
there you go.
Because if we get you elected, I know I'm in good hands. And I don't mean that jokingly, because, you know,
I know
people need that and everything. But that was her look at
her
things.
Reason.
And I just want people to know that I believe in a safe and secure community. We have to have our fire and police, and they need everything. They're the ones that have had to work 365 days a year and 24 hours a day in order to keep us safe.
Right.
And they didn't have choices to work at home. And if somebody had a fire, you know, they had to respond. So
the time to
we have to keep them, we have to keep them equipped and staffed so that we are safe. We also need to remember, and it's getting back to the basics with all the car thieves and hit and runs we've had. We've had two hit and runs on both sides of me in this neighborhood, and we've had three cars stolen. One they did find, so he got it back. But we need to know our neighbors. You need to know your neighbors from where you are, five houses on your left, five houses on your right, and across the street. Because if even if we just know each other's names and you sort of know when they do work and whatnot, if you see something, you're going to know, well, that isn't right because this and
we're
that.
We're all in this together. Hey, Nancy, I hate to cut you off, but you're great.
I'm crossing my fingers and hoping for you the best. And we contributed to your campaign, and we urge everybody else.
Thank you.
Well, you deserved it. You deserved it. And we urge other people to do the same.
All right. Nancy, thank you very much.
Perfect.
Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks. And, you know, and also, too, just anybody, it pay attention to your local elections because they matter now, I think, more than ever. Hey, check out the. Thank you, Nancy. If you miss the show or you want to catch it, you can always get everything at chuckandjulie.com. We've got all the links to various podcasts, the links to the Rumble. Want to thank everybody today. Thanks, everybody on Zoom. Great guys at BBS. That'll do it. Now it's time for us to launch our party Friday. Hope you all do the same thing.
Take care, everybody. Have a great weekend.